You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. By the way, before we get to talking a little Atlanta Braves baseball, up 3-2, but lost yesterday 11-2 in Game 5. Tell you about Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. Look, here are some of the more popular uses for Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. Rusty chains and gears, pillow box, fuel tank removals, stuck ball joints, brake caliper removals, axle nut removals. Let's face it, if you have something that's rusted, frozen, you need it loosened up, Freol Deep Penetrating Oil delivers three times more lubricant because it takes less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. So I've told you many times, I'm running out of elbow grease as I get older. Well, this helps you get the job done. Freol is also body shop safe, which means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, silicone free. Give it a try. You can find it at Napa, AutoZone, O'Reilly, auto parts stores. It's Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. All right, the Atlanta Braves up 3-2, looking to go back to the World Series for the first time since 1999. Corey McCarthy joins us from Talking Chop on SB Nation as we get to talking Atlanta Braves baseball. How are you, my friend?
Good. McCartney, not McCarthy. You're lining me up here with that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Yeah, sorry about that. I wrote it
wrong. No worries.
But the Atlanta Braves, this is a team, again, 3-2, but last night they lose. Before we get to the overall picture of the Braves and how we kind of got here with this team and in the playoffs over the last couple of years, there's an old adage, momentum is only good as your next day's starter, but how worrisome is it now that coming off that Game 5 loss?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it was, you know, a tough loss for them, you know, and obviously, you know, Max Fried was really off his game last night. I mean, you know, 10 hard hit balls against them, which is, you know, hits of 95 miles per hour or higher, including a season high 112.3 off the bat of Chris Taylor for that first home run. So he just wasn't, you know, on his game. I mean, Fried, you know, led the majors in ERA after the All-Star break. He had been so consistent and so consistently dominant for the Braves. But obviously, you know, the wheels completely went off for him last night. And then, you know, the one thing you can say is the Braves didn't put their high leverage bullpen arms out there. They kind of rode with some guys that were, you know, basically punching bags for a lot of the evening. And, you know, certainly heading back to Atlanta 3-2 after having two chances to, you know, to clean this thing out in L.A., you know, there's certainly some trepidation there and obviously some old wounds kind of opening back up here for the Braves heading back to Truist Park.
Yeah, because we talk about this a lot in other sports, especially when teams get to a postseason and they played pretty well and they have an opportunity to win something and then they let it slip away. And then they go into the next season and they sort of go through the motions because what they really, really want is to get to where they just left off as quickly as they possibly can, and the calendar sort of prevents that. How much did that 3-1 lead that was blown last year carry into the way the Braves started this season and kind of was going through the motions of a regular season?
I don't know how much it really did, because I think there were a lot of other things at play. I mean, you know, the early play of Freddie Freeman, I know, is something a lot of people fixated on, and certainly his contract status played into the fact of that. So too did his personal situation there with him and his wife having you know, two children, you know, within, you know, a span of a few weeks, and him having to kind of be taken away from them in California to go to Florida and not be with his, you know, extremely young boys. So I think a lot of that played into Freeman's slow start. And then, you know, certainly, you know, there's a lot of things that got in their way along the way. I mean, you know, losing Rauw Acuña Jr. and you lose Marcelo Zuna, you find out Mike Soroka is not going to be available again for the duration of this season. So I think there were a lot of things that just got in their way. And then the Mets, you know, in their start, and obviously the East had bulked up in a lot of ways, and it may not have lived up to the expectations, but it still took this Braves team 105 games to get above 500. It took them 158 games to clinch first place in this division. So just along the way, I mean, certainly being here, if you would have had this conversation in April as a four-time defending East champion, you would have expected them to be in the NLCS, but there were a lot of hurdles along the way.
And give us an identifiable nature. I mean, people are kind of seeing these Braves maybe for the first time, maybe just paying attention a little bit to the regular season. But those who don't live in the Southeast or in Braves country, How do you identify this team? They hit a lot of home runs, but what is the way you classify them?
I think it's something that's changed, you know, from April 1st until now, because, you know, this team was really about, okay, you've got this generation's Chipper Jones and Freddie Freeman, and then you have two of the most exciting young players in the game in Ronald Acuña Jr. and Ozzie Albies, and obviously, you know, Acuña, you know, with a knee injury the day before the All-Star break, and they had to go out and retool this offense. So I think it's a team predicated on power. You know, they hit the most home runs in the National League since the All-Star break. No, a National League outfield has hit more home runs since this retooled Braves team. They're predicated on that, and they're predicated on some really elite starting pitching that's shown up some a little bit in this postseason, but certainly last night they got out of their game in a number of ways.
Who is Austin Riley and where did he come from? Because he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Riley was a kid that was drafted by the Braves. And, you know, it's interesting to think about, you know, the deal that they swung, you know, with the Padres, you know, where they ended up sending them Justin Upton and all that. Included in that deal was Max Fried and the 41st pick in the 2014 draft that ended up being Austin Riley. So that, you know, was bore out of that deal with San Diego. But man, this is the kid from Mississippi that loves to hit. You know, it's funny. He's a guy who, you know, if you could put him in a tree stand from, you know, the day one of the off season until it's time to come back to spring training, he would be completely content. He's all about hunting, fishing, that whole life. And man, he's been hunting a lot of pitching this season and this postseason, and is really making a name for himself, is solidifying himself as one of the best young third basemen in baseball.
Give us an idea of this rotation. Where is its strength? Where is its weakness?
Well, Charlie Morton, you know, a guy that's got postseason pedigree, you know, he's kind of the stabilizer for this group. And then Max Fried, you didn't see it last night in totality, but just a great, you know, overpowering at times and crafty at times lefty. And then Ian Anderson, you know, we've seen the postseason pedigree from him as well. And then last year he was, you know, historically great, like Christy Mathewson level great in the postseason. You know, it's dying off a bit past that here with Foster Yanoa and his struggles and Drew Smyly. And they've kind of had to be patchwork past that. But, you know, with Soroka's back in that mold, it has a chance to be really, really good. But I think those three, they feel really confident about, and they're set up to have, you know, Ian Anderson tomorrow night in game six at home, and then potentially if it goes seven, Charlie Morton in game seven.
You know, we talk about home field advantage in baseball, and again, it can depend. Some places, some setups are work for certain teams. Truist Park, does it allow the Braves to have an advantage? What kind of park is it, and what can we see in a game six, maybe even a game seven, if it goes that far?
Yeah, I mean, they're 4-0 at home in the postseason. They've not lost consecutive games there since September 14th and 15th. So I think it's just a park that plays well to what they do, which is, you know, being able to hit the long ball and then, you know, just to be, you know, to keep the line moving offensively. And they feel like, you know, it's deep enough in points where, you know, their pitching is kind of, they try to stay away from fly ball pitchers. So there are a lot more guys who elicit ground balls, and you know, certainly, you know, they're going to have a couple guys who do that in six, and if it goes seven, in Anderson and Morton.
Max Scherzer, this is a team that before Scherzer went to Los Angeles, is a guy that this Braves team faced a lot, was even in Washington. Does Scherzer have a lot of success against the Braves? What can we expect in game six?
Yeah, he does have a lot of success against the Braves, and frankly, has a lot of success against everybody. But
sure.
I don't know what version of Max Fried we're going to get. Max Scherzer we're going to get. I mean, the last time out, you know, he seemed relieved when Dave Roberts came to get him. And how oftentimes do you see Max Scherzer, you know, being pulled out of a game and him look like he's ready to throw down with the manager when he comes out to get the ball? That's the first time I can ever remember him looking relieved. And then you hear afterwards that he had a dead arm. So, you know, I feel like the plan of having him pitch that closer role to close out the NLDS has backfired on this Dodgers team. He's going to be fully rested, but what is that going to mean going into tomorrow night? You know, this guy's going to gut out whatever version of him takes the mound. He's going to be out there to throw, you know, 110 pitches. But I think it'll be interesting to see what version of them they actually have working on Saturday night.
Corey, I like to kind of ask big picture questions here. And so, as I mentioned at the start of this interview, the Braves are looking to get back to the World Series for the first time since 99. And for those of us who remember the Braves of the 90s, it is still daunting that they only had one World Series championship with such good teams. But the 22 years that of this gap, and again, they're not in the World Series yet, so the drought could continue. But how has that weighed on the organization and the fan base to have looked back on a decade of excellence only to see one world championship and then to say after 99, oh, my God, we haven't gone to the World Series since?
I don't really think they look at it like that. You know, I think they look at it as, okay, you won 14 consecutive division titles. You put three pitchers, a position player in Chipper Jones and a manager in Bobby Cox in the Hall of Fame from that group. And now you've got a core that you've, you know, slowly assembled and put to this point where you have another guy who's on the Hall of Fame trajectory in Freddie Freeman, and you have two of the best young players in baseball in Acuna and Ozzie Albies. I don't think they've looked at it from that way. I think it's been more of, you know, they've certainly celebrated what they had during the 90s and early 2000s, but I think, you know, this is a national brand. I mean, you think about TBS, and I remember, you know, conversations with guys like Gerald Laird when they would come from Arizona to join the Braves, and he'd say, "I'd come home from school every day and watch this team." So I don't think that they've ever felt as though they didn't, you know, get enough out of that run. But I think they love where they're at right now, and certainly have a young core where they feel like the window to win is completely wide open.
Okay, let me rephrase the question. How about the fan base, the people you are interacting with, the people that want championships? They don't look at it as, well, it's a business end of the deal. It's a brand. A fan who buys season tickets, a fan who buys the product. This is 30 years of playoff baseball that has resulted in one championship.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that the fans still don't look at it that way. I think they look at what they had, and no, I don't think they do. I think you go to Truist Park and you see 14 straight division title banners hanging up there. What other organization besides the Yankees can say that? What other one? No, there isn't one. I just don't think that.
During that same stretch, the Marlins have two world championships.
But they made it to three World Series in that span. I don't think they look at it. I don't think you're more than welcome to look at it from that way. But I'm telling you, I've lived here for 16 years. Braves fans do not look at it from the fact that they should have gotten more
and
they were disappointed from that run.
That's pretty amazing. That's great, because I think other fan bases would, if they had gone to that many playoff series, that many postseason runs, and in the end it was just one championship. Especially the 96 team that was written as one of the greatest baseball teams in the history of the sport and lost four straight. Like that's pretty fun. That's pretty impressive. I have to admit, that's pretty impressive. Corey, thank you very much for helping us kind of set up this team and what we can see coming up this weekend. Really good insight. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
You got it. Yeah, Corey McCartney from Talkin' Shop. That is really amazing. I can you imagine if, Ron, come in here for a second. Dodgers, ending that drought, if you had 30 years of going to the postseason, how much would just playoff success be okay?
I mean, 10 years? Like 10 years of just winning the division every single year for 10 years?
If you go back to 91, okay, so when the Braves went from worst to first.
Yeah.
All right, so 91. So we're talking about a 30-year span from 91 to 2001. And you had the Atlanta Braves going to all of those playoffs. Forget the World Series. All of those playoffs. And in 30 years, you got one championship out of it.
Yeah.
Like, you think a guy that has been a Braves fan for 40 years would be like, "Nah, I'm good, man. That's fine. I'm okay with that."
Yeah, no.
Or do you think they go, "Man,
no, listen. Okay, before the Dodgers won last year, right? And that was their first World Series victory since 1988. But they had gone to two previous ones, in the span of – so they went to three World Series in 4 years. If we had lost last year again, it would have been devastating.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when we lost against the Astros, especially losing Game 7 at Dodger Stadium, that one stung a lot.
I want to continue that thought when we come back, because I know from experience with my own football team that it wasn't cool. Like it went from 1980 to when they won in 2005. All right, we'll continue that thought as we continue with Wake Up Call.